Hello, and welcome to episode 100 of the Movie Brats Podcast. I'm Carter, and joining me, as always, is Jonathan. Jonathan, how are you doing celebrating our 100th episode? I know you have something special for us today.
I know. I was going to say I feel special. We've done this for 5 years almost, and our 100th episode. There's some months where, especially during the pandemic, we went a little bit without doing an episode, but fairly consistently, you know, we've had 100 episodes. This is our 100th.
Yeah, and lots of great movies we have discussed, but for today.
Yes, my idea was that we're going to go back through the last 5 years that we've been doing the podcast. We started in 2019, and we are going to each pick one film from each year that we never reviewed in full. We may have mentioned it in passing. It may have been in our top 10 list when the other one hadn't seen it, or we might have just mentioned it as an honorable mention, but we never full-on reviewed a film. And so the idea is that we're going to pick one each year from 2019 to 2023. And then in the future, what we'll do is we'll take another five-year chunk, 2018, and we'll go backwards. And we will just recommend films, not necessarily saying the best film this year, but, you know, every so often, every few months, we're just going to take 5 years at a time and recommend some films each year.
So a long-term Movie Brats podcast is starting for our 100th episode. Yes. I think we're going to go in reverse chronological order, right? Starting with 2023.
Yes.
Do you want to get us started?
You know, you should start since I set up the episode idea. So you go first with your 2023 pick.
All right, here we go. This is one that made the top 10 for my best movies of 2023, but we did not discuss it very much. It is Scrapper, directed by Charlotte Regan in her feature debut and starring Lola Campbell as Georgie, the main character who's a young girl, and Harris Dickinson as her father, who recently returns from a 10-year absence after the main character, Georgie's mother, has died. This is a very, very funny film, sort of made in the vein of something like The Hunt for the Wilder People, a kind of like low-budget, almost fantastical in its style and in the way it depicts the real world, but really funny and has an incredible heart. And I'm usually not a fan of child actor performances, but Lola Campbell as Georgie is really funny and quite emotional, at least in some parts of it, especially when she has this initial distrust of her father, who hasn't been there basically her whole life and doesn't remember, and dealing with this serious trauma of losing her mother. And in the early stages of the movie, before her dad shows up, she's kind of just existing by herself and lying to government workers on the phone and lying to her teachers and faculty and getting random local people to pretend that they're her parents. But I saw this in September, I think, and I had seen the trailer for it, and it looked really interesting, but didn't have many expectations going into it, and this really blew me away. And it's a very short movie at 84 minutes. I'm not sure it's streaming anywhere, but it is definitely available for renting. And this is a movie I have a hard time thinking anyone would not like, to be honest. It kind of has universal appeal, really funny. It gives you a side of sort of London area that you wouldn't necessarily see depicted in films very often, but has a great sort of dry British sense of humor, and also really interesting, I guess you could sort of say, subjective stylistic elements to sort of show the world through how this little girl is seeing everything happening. You still have not seen this one yet, right, Jonathan?
Correct. I wanted to see it last year, but it never played real close to me, and I just never got over to Atlanta or Charlotte. It was playing in most of the art house theaters that, but for where I am, poor me, like 80 minute drive at least to see a lot of these type of movies. But I did actually see, interestingly, this was her first feature film, correct? Uh-huh. This writer director.
Yes.
The cinematographer of this went on and had actually the same year it premiered at Cannes, Molly Manning Walker, who shot the film, Scrapper, the cinematographer, she had her feature directorial debut with How to Have Sex. It was interesting. She's a cinematographer turned director, but yeah, I certainly wanted to see this, and I noticed that a supporting role, Harris Dickinson, who was in Beach Rats and Triangle of Sadness, he and Iron Claw, he has a supporting role in Scrapper.
Yes, and is one of the best parts of the movie. He's very funny. He has a certain like charisma and quality in the Iron Claw, which I think is the only movie I've seen him in. Maybe the Kingsman, actually, the sort of Kingsman, the Secret Service prequel, whatever that one was called. I think he was also in that. But
Did you
really impressed
see
by him in this one.
See How They Run with Saoirse
Oh
Ronan and Finn
yes, yeah,
Muffick?
he is in that. He plays
Richard Attenborough.
Richard Attenborough, yeah, which is he doesn't really look like, which is interesting casting.
And I would have actually possibly picked this, but we did an episode, remember, where we talked about our five favorite films of the last 5 years, not one each year, but just he's in The Souvenir Part Two, which was my favorite film of 2021. But I also, just to connect it, also, Beach Rats is the second film by Eliza Hittman. And one of my top five films of the last 5 years was Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. So weird connections throughout.
There you go.
But yes, Scrapper is streaming on Showtime, and it's available to rent on Amazon and Apple
Yes.
TV Plus. So it's easy to stream. It's on Fubo. I don't have that, but.
Well, easily one of my favorite movies of last year, and one I think most people would like if they gave it a shot. So, Jonathan, what is your movie from 2023?
So my pick is also a comedy that is an international film, but also in the English language. I picked a Canadian comedy drama, biopic of sorts. I picked Blackberry. It is a Canadian film that was nominated for many, many Canadian awards. I think they call them the Genie Awards. It's like the César is France and the Oscars are obviously America. It was nominated for many, many different awards. I'm not sure if they're called the Genie still, but there are it was nominated for a lot of Canadian awards. It's a film, I've never seen any films by this writer director, also a supporting actor in the film, Matt Johnson.
Oh, really?
Last year we had all these films, the last few years, all these origin stories about products such as Tetris and Air and Flaming Hot Cheetos. I saw Air and like that fairly well, but Blackberry was a terrific film. I would put it very close to being in my top 10 of last year. It was in my 11 through 15 honorable mentions. And there was a really stacked for me of the acting categories. The best supporting actor last year was really stacked. You had De Niro
Yes.
in Killers of the Flower Moon, Ryan Gosling, Robert Downey Jr., and people that weren't even nominated that I really
Dominic
loved.
Sessa.
Dominic Sessa and the Holdovers. You had Charles Melton in May, December. But one of them that I would have loved to have seen was Glenn Howerton for Blackberry. He is probably best known for being on the long-running
Yes.
series, It's Always Sunny in
Playing a
Philadelphia.
slightly psychotic character.
Yes, he plays a balding man who is ferocious but also very funny. And I would describe the film as The Social Network meets In the Loop, the film satire comedy by Armando Iannucci, who was based on his show The Thick of It. And it has the kind of origin story of a major technological advance, but it's also very funny. And it stars Jay Baruchel, Canadian actor, comic actor often, who has been in some Judd Apatow films like Knocked Up and This Is the End. And I just thought this movie was a riot. It has really good performances. It's laugh out loud funny. It's one of the better films based on historical events. It's kind of odd to say that for something that's happened in the so recent past, but I don't know if there's a definition of how long ago something has to have happened to be considered a period piece, but
Yeah,
it's
right.
based on the real events of how the BlackBerry was massively successful and then came crumbling down very rapidly. But it's also a film, comedy, drama, where it's really gripping. There's something about it that's like really propulsive, and you're just really pulled into the movie while just being incredibly entertaining and funny the whole way through too. But I highly recommend Blackberry. Interestingly, they had, I guess, so much footage that they have done a extended mini series version of it. I assume that you can watch both of them streaming. I know on Hulu they have the TV extended version. I only saw the film that was in theaters. It's just about 2 hours long, right at 2 hours.
I think it's also
But
on Hulu.
I highly recommend. At least I've seen the theatrical film, Blackberry, one of the better films of 2023. So that's my recommendation from last year.
So mine for 2022, a period piece, goes back a bit further than Blackberry. It is Corsage, directed by Marie Kreutzer, starring Vicky Krieps as the Empress of Austria, Elizabeth, who's probably one of the most well-known figures in Austrian history, who was married to the Emperor Franz Joseph, whose death caused the crisis after the, or actually, whose lack of a male heir led to the murder of Archduke Franz Ferdinand in the outbreak of World War I. So some pretty deep European history depicted in Corsage. But I think it makes an interesting companion piece with Spencer from 2021, directed by Pablo Larraín, which was one of my favorite movies of that year, in its depiction of the kind of loneliness and sense of isolation that can come with being in a position of extreme public prominence and also responsibility that you would have, especially being the, I guess, almost kind of passive figure in a monarchy where the king obviously has more responsibilities and public-facing elements, while the queen, or in Princess Diana's case, Princess of Wales, is merely expected to be kind of perfect in every way and almost sub have their personality be subservient to the roles and expectations required of the position that they are in. And like Princess Diana, she was not did not grow up in the kind of royal environment that their partners would have been with, so in some ways are unfamiliar and resistant towards some of the more strict aspects of being married to a king or potential king. It has an excellent leading performance by Vicky Creeps, who people might know from Phantom Thread. She was also last year in Bergman Island. Was that last year or 2 years ago?
Might be 3 years ago now, but
Oh,
3 years
really?
ago. And
I'm
she was
losing
in,
track of time during the
I know.
COVID era.
Speaking of losing track of time, she was also in Shyamalan's Old.
Oh, wow. How about that? But this is probably, along with Phantom Thread, my favorite performance that I've seen her in. And not a historical character that I was too familiar with before seeing this, but did some further research on Wikipedia afterwards. But as list longtime listeners of this show will know, I'm a real sucker for a costume drama, and especially one that takes maybe a slightly non-traditional perspective towards the costume drama, which is why I think I was a little more lenient towards Napoleon than Jonathan was at the end of last year when we talked about it. But it's not quite like something like Marie Antoinette, the Sofia Coppola movie, and it's almost like radical presentation of history. It has a few bits similar to that where they have more contemporary music, but unlike Marie Antoinette, they don't play it in the sort of original release. They kind of like pretend to hide it by making them using traditional instruments from that period and kind of like aping the sound of that. But it was actually a really cool stylistic choice that they included in the movie to give it a sort of sense of contemporary kind of feeling, but also respecting the traditional norms of the costume drama and the sort of historical accurate things that you expect in those. Is this one that you have seen, Jonathan?
Yes, I saw it in the
Okay.
theater and I thought it was a very good film. And I, it's one of those that kind of came out. There's some movies I think that get a little bit lost because they kind of come out right at the end of the year and often get a wider theatrical release early in the next year. And I think that a lot of people didn't see it. But I certainly recommend it. And also, interestingly, Vicky Creeps is shooting Jim Jarmusch's new film with Cate Blanchett right now. So
Interesting.
she's has some really interesting choices as an actress. So yes, I very much I also remember Patti Smith posted about it multiple times on social media. She was a big fan of it, and
Really?
she met Vicky Creeps and was touting the movie. So
Well, that's a strong endorsement.
yes. So, and it, like you said, it's not an entirely straightforward historical drama period piece film, because there's some little flights of weirdness in it. There's a part where she's in a room and she's really big, like a giant, and the room is really small. And there's like some food play where like they're dumping chocolate on each other. And yeah, but yeah, I thought it was a very interesting film. So yes, I recommend it too.
Yes, so that is my pick from 2022.
Well, my pick from 2022, it actually got a theatrical release in the US last year in 2023, but it premiered at the Venice Film Festival, is Paul Schrader's most recent film, as of the recording of this podcast. Next month, that will not be true because he has his newest film, O Canada, premiering at Cannes. But his film, Master Gardener, I thought was a very good film. It was also, like I said, since it got a theatrical release last year, it was in my 11 through 15 honorable mentions of last year. It stars Joel Edgerton, and it kind of completes this trilogy that did not start out as a trilogy, but after the fact became kind of a trilogy of First Reformed, The Card Counter, and then Master Gardener. And First Reformed was my favorite film that year. I think it's an incredible film. But I thought Master Gardener was really interesting. Joel Edgerton plays this quiet, reserved gardener who, fairly early in the movie, we realize, once we see him taking his shirt off and he has giant swastika tattoos, that he has a checkered past as a,
Beyond checkered, it sounds like.
yes, as kind of a proud boy, neo-Nazi, white supremacist. And he is quietly working as a gardener and does not really believe that stuff anymore. It is in his past. And he's actually working with the government to help possibly expose some people. But he actually starts a relationship with this young African American woman. And one of the best performances in the film is Sigourney Weaver, who
She's
I
like his
thought
patron or
perhaps,
something, right?
yes. And it's kind of some weird sexual chemistry between the two of them, because she basically lets him work on the in the garden if he perform sexual favors for her. So it was in John Waters' top five of last year. He was a fan of it. I thought it was really strong. It got fairly good, but kind of mixed reviews. It didn't get as good reviews as First Reformed or The Card Counter, but I thought it was very good. And Paul Schrader's had some health problems the last few years. He's had COVID and he's been in and out of the hospital. And perhaps their part of me was like, oh, this might be Schrader's last movie. And not that you're grading on a curve, but there's a certain melancholy in the movie. Like, it would have been, if he had gone out with that movie, I would have been okay with that. But his next movie is about a dying filmmaker, so maybe that really will be his last movie. I hope he keeps making movies for many more years. But I really recommend Master Gardener, which also is like my previous one on Hulu currently.
He also has a very active online presence, does he not?
Oh yes, you have to follow him on Facebook. He's recently tweeted about how much well, he's tweeted many times about his love of Taylor Swift. He's a Swiftie. Went to one of her concerts on his birthday a few years ago.
Oh, really?
And he was talking about how there needs to be a biopic about Taylor Swift. I'm like, my God, what if Schrader did a Taylor Swift biopic? What if he went out with that? And I
What
love
I
that
thought he
someone.
was suggesting is that he was going to narrativize some of her songs or like adapt a song.
That would be cool too. Someone said that it should just be a 3-hour shot of Taylor Swift floating, like in First Reformed, when Ethan Hawke and the female lead were floating in that movie. Imagine Taylor Swift floating in a Paul Schrader movie. I mean, she was in Cats in Amsterdam, so she has been in a few films.
And Valentine's Day, right?
I know, but well, and of course, she had one of the 10 most highest grossing films of last year, her concert
While
movie.
playing
So
herself, yes.
yes, but she could certainly, interestingly, the Movie Master Gardner was he wanted Zendaya to play the African American lead, but they could not come to an agreement. So an actress named Quintessa Swindell, who I'd never seen, she's not done much. She was in Black Adam that same year,
Oh,
but I highly
interesting
recommend.
contrast.
Yes, he said. I mean, I love another th great thing about Paul Schrader's Facebook is he gives zero fucks anymore. And he said in an interview that his wife, who sadly is in a mental care facility because she has Alzheimer's or dementia, Mary Beth Hurt, I think is his wife's name. But anyway, she's really good friends with Glenn Close, and Glenn Close is always like, "Oh, Paul, you should write me a script. You should write a role for me. I'd love to be in one of your movies." And then he sent her the script for Master Gardener, and she was like, "Yeah, I pass on this, Paul. Sorry." And then he gave it to Sigourney Weaver then, but she passed a really good role. But I highly recommend Master Gardener. You have not seen that one.
No, I have not. I've seen the other two of the unofficial trilogy. I think we talked about The Card Counter, right? And First Reformed was definitely on my
Yes.
best movies of the previous decade, which is an episode we must have done, I don't know,
I
3 years ago now.
First Reform's my favorite of the three, certainly, but I like Master Gardener even more than The Card Counter.
Well,
So
because
I
I quite like The
recommend
Card
it.
Counter.
Yeah, I liked it too, but I like Master Gardener a little bit more even.
Okay, I'll need to see that. Well, I think I'm pretty sure my next one is one that you have not seen, but it is a director you like very much. From 2021, my pick is The Velvet Underground, a documentary film directed by Todd Haynes, about the titular rock band, The Velvet Underground, which a lot of people think of as, despite not being one of the best-selling or most popular bands of all time, is certainly one of the most influential. And this is definitely the documentary about them on the subject. We've kind of entered, would you call it a golden age or an oversaturation of music documentaries in the last decade?
Well, the good ones stand out. I would say that the line I've heard about the Velvet Underground is that their albums did not sell very much in their original release, but everyone who did buy an album were like
Started a band.
majorly influential and started a band. Yes, that's the line about them. The right people listened to it and bought the
Yes.
albums when they first came out.
And it's a band I liked very much when I was a snobbish high school student who was like, oh, you listen to that. But I still very much like the Velvet Underground. And despite maybe sounding like they're a bit avant-garde or unapproachable, they have some really, really excellent songs. And unfortunately for the documentary, the driving force of the band, Lou Reed, had passed away before the making of this documentary. But every other person in the band who was involved, including John Cale and Maureen Tucker and many other people, participated in interviews in this movie. And it has a really interesting visual style. It makes extensive use of split screen in a way that I really like, because documentaries can a lot of times just be someone talking and just their
To
face on screen.
use the name of another great band, Talking Heads.
Yes, Talking Heads, exactly. But this one, I wouldn't say it uses experimental imagery to in the split screen process of one side being a talking head and the other side being something totally different, but sometimes it does veer into that in a way that I found really visually interesting and created a sort of commentary on what you were hearing and what the person looked like as they were saying things. And obviously a lot of it is them talking about Lou Reed because he was the driving force behind the band, and great archival footage as well. But what were you going to say, Jonathan?
Well, I've heard that split screen is very much like of the era of Andy Warhol. That's like the big influence because he had films where you had the, split screen. That's what it's kind of the influence of it.
Yes, and the Velvet Underground at least started as kind of Andy Warhol's house band, and a lot of the big parties he threw in the 1960s, they were the people playing really weird experimental rock music while everyone was on drugs. So it goes a little bit into that as well. But Todd Haynes, we were both big fans of his movie that came out last year, May, December, and it's been one of the more influential and celebrated American filmmakers of the last 30 plus years. And has he made any other documentaries? I'm not entirely sure.
No, but I will say that perhaps his name will come up again later in this episode. And I will say that it is Apple TV. It's on Apple TV. They made the film,
Yes.
but it's, I think possibly, I may be wrong about this. I think it's the only Apple TV original film that's been released on physical media because
It's
the
in the
Criterion
Criterion
Collection.
Collection.
Yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon, I think quite likely will eventually get a Criterion release, but it's not out yet. Coda, Best Picture winner, has never been released on physical media.
Crazy.
But yeah, it's the only feature film by him I haven't seen. And yes, I very much, I just, ha I it's one that it came out during the pandemic, and I kind of wasn't going to movies for a bit because the pandemic got pretty bad. So there are two, it's interesting. Last year, there were two films by directors that I really went out of my way. I went all the way to Atlanta to see their films because their previous one I missed. Both streaming films. I didn't see Todd Haynes' The Velvet Underground. I saw The Killer last year, and then I didn't see well, no, it was David Fincher and Mank in The Killer, and then I saw The Velvet Underground. Didn't see The Velvet Underground, and I went to see May December last year. So I made up for missing their previous films.
Are you a fan of the band Velvet Underground?
I don't really know them that well, but I'm sure that I've heard their songs. But
Yeah.
as a film geek and a completist with directors, I definitely want to see this one.
I think it serves as a great movie for fans and gives you the kind of stuff you want, but I think it also serves as a good introduction to the band if you're unfamiliar with them. And that's sort of what the best music documentaries should do. But it is not necessarily always the case. And we have had a lot of them over the last few years.
Well,
It's
the problem with some of them I've heard, even ones I haven't seen, but I've heard is that they feel kind of like big fluff publicity pieces for the band, and they feel like they're not really warts and all.
This one is definitely warts and all.
Yes. Well, I've heard the, you know, that Lou Reed could be really difficult.
Yes, and I believe was an addict during most of the period that they
Yes.
were making music, which obviously would lead to complications and difficulties and some personal grievances. Yeah, let's say that not everyone enjoyed spending time around Lou Reed.
Is Laurie Anderson interviewed in the film, his wife?
It's been a while since I've seen it, so I saw it when it first came out and haven't seen it since then,
I'd be
so.
surprised if she wasn't in it, because
Yeah.
you know. But
Excellent, excellent film. So your pick from 2021, Jonathan.
yes, my pick of that year is a French film, Happening, by Audrey Dewan. This is a feature debut, and it is a harrowing and upsetting, but incredibly gripping and important film. It's a period piece about a woman. It's based on her memoir, the woman who wrote the memoir, and it's set in the 1960s in France, and it's about a young woman, early 20s, college student, who finds that she is pregnant, and she, at that time, it's illegal to have abortions, so she goes about trying to get an illegal abortion. And it
Oh
the movie
shit.
came out when I saw it. It came out, I saw it, funnily enough, not funny, but in Texas when I was visiting, going to a convention. And it was like right as the Supreme Court nonsense was happening about abortion in the United States. So it was like
Wow.
highly relevant when I saw it. And it's a really hard film to watch in some scenes because you see her trying to give herself a miscarriage, basically. Like,
Oh shit.
you know, I don't want to even say some of the things she does to her body. But it's a really moving film, and it's it makes it would be like the ultimate downer double feature of all time. But it's one of the best foreign abortion films, along with 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, which is a masterpiece.
You
But
just want to have
yeah,
a
it's.
really sad Friday night. You'd watch a bit.
Yes. Interestingly, this female director, the next film she's doing is also a film that's about like women's sexuality and their bodies. She's doing a new film version of Emmanuel, that legendary like
Like
soft
erotic series.
core. Yeah. And she's doing a new version of it. And Naomi Watts is in it, one of the actresses. She's not playing the lead role, not playing Emmanuel. But I'm very intrigued by that. But Happening is one of the better directorial debuts I've seen.
It is a
And
debut.
yeah,
Oh, wow.
I'm almost certain it was. Yeah, it's, yes, it was. Oh, no, wait, my mistake. She had done one other film before. This was her second film,
One without a Wikipedia page, though, so does it really count?
Losing It. Yeah, okay, it was titled Losing It, but Happening was her second film. But it's a really strong movie. And the lead performance in it, I don't want to butcher the woman's name, forgive me, but it was a really strong performance. It's a film where you follow in long unbroken shots frequently, and sometimes they're very physical, and what she's doing is really taxing on her body. And it's one of those films where it's a drama, but it's almost like a thriller. Because it's just so you don't know what's going to happen, and there's just such a tension to it, and it's so vulnerable too, because it's so much to do with the body, and it's like so visceral in a way. So
Yeesh.
happening, not an easy film to watch, but it's one that I think everyone should see. Also, this is not something I planned. Currently streaming on Hulu.
Wow, this is like a big old ad for Hulu tonight. We should get
I know.
sponsored.
Yes.
Well, I think we are going to take a brief break and then come back to finish with our movies from 2020 and 2019. So we will be back in just a second. We are back in our countdown of movie recommendations that we did not discuss on our main podcast over the last 5 years. We just finished 2021 and we'll now do our movies from 2020. So we both, I think, had a little bit of difficulty finding movies from 2020 that we had not talked about already because there were so few movies released that year. But after some digging, I found one that I think I'm pretty happy with. It is Da 5 Bloods, directed by Spike Lee, which was released on Netflix pretty close to the beginning of the COVID shutdown in June of 2020. This is probably not Spike Lee's best movie by any means. It's probably not even one of his best from the 10 year last 10 years, as I think both of us quite like BlacKkKlansman a bit more. But this is a very interesting, almost kind of heist Vietnam kind of movie about five Vietnam veterans who were all in the same squad in the 1st Infantry Division in Vietnam, who it's a treasure sort of thing, right? That's left behind in Vietnam. And they had a very charismatic commanding officer who's played in the movie by Chadwick Boseman in one of the best performances of his career, I would say. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, oh, I actually haven't seen that many movies he was in. I
Well,
feel
yeah.
bad because when he died, I think I'd only seen Black Panther was the only film I'd actually ever seen
Really?
him.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah.
we reviewed Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which came out
Yeah.
posthumously. And
Yes.
you've seen
And
this
this
one.
one. Yeah. I missed all he did a lot of black.
You haven't seen
No,
21 Bridges?
I did want to see the one where he played James Brown. I heard that was a really good
Get on up.
performance.
Yeah.
But I never saw the Jackie Robinson 142. I never saw he's one of those that I was like, oh, it was so tragic that he died, but I was like, I've only actually seen Black Panther and I hate that movie so much. But it was a great loss. And he's great in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
And I think in this one, I mean, you have consequently seen this. We didn't review it at the time because you did not watch it in 2020.
Yes, it's one of those that because I'm weird, I was like the opposite of a lot of people. I think many people caught up with so many movies during the pandemic because they could watch it at home streaming. But because I'm such a creature of going to the movie theater, there are so many movies that I missed because I would have absolutely seen this if it had gotten a release in the theater. Even if I had to drive to Atlanta, it played 1 week on Netflix, a Netflix film playing in Atlanta in the theater. It's like I would have gotten to see it because it's a new Spike Lee film that got very good reviews. But I didn't see it till like 2 years later, but I have seen it. So I definitely recommend. It would have been a really good one to see on a big screen too, though.
Oh, definitely. And it's quite long at 156 minutes. So I know
And Statham.
sometimes people have difficulty watching streaming movies for that long
Yes,
and not
and
looking on their phones.
take it off the go to the next movie, next episode thing, because there's a little thing at the very end of the credits.
Yes, which is also something Netflix is ruining, is the end credits of movies by going
Yes.
immediately the next 15 seconds.
I remember Edgar Wright saying that he watched Cleo from 5 to 7 on like iTunes or Apple TV. And it's one of those movies where like it's a close up of Cleo's face and there's no end credits. It just ends. And it's like this really beautiful shot of her face. And like the last 10 seconds, it's like, do you want to watch, Red Notice next? Or something. It's like, You
Like,
know,
no, I don't.
no, I want to watch the, you know, her, I want to look into her eyes and contemplate the future of this character. But yeah, but yeah, it should be an, you know, you should have a setting on your streaming accounts like that. I don't ever want anything to pop up. I don't think you can even do that. You can like
Definitely
say
can't do it on
continue.
Netflix, though. No. You can do
You
like can yeah,
can,
continue watching credits.
yeah.
But that's like,
Some,
yeah.
yes, but The Five Bloods, I think some people were disappointed, especially in a year that was cut short with the number of releases, that Delroy Lindo was especially good. They
Yes.
thought he might have got nominated for a, I don't know if it would, you know, probably would have been a lead performance, but
Yeah.
you know, I think
Or it is an ensemble piece, so you can almost make the case all of them are supporting.
or all of them lead, yeah.
Or all of them lead,
Yeah.
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 I
Well,
mean,
Chadwick Boseman certainly would be supporting. There
supporting,
was
yes.
talk that he might be, you know, it's happened a few times in the Oscars of getting two nominations in the same year for different films. But yeah, I it's interestingly, there was a virtual interview where Oliver Stone interviewed Spike Lee about the film, and there was a moment where Oliver Stone was going to direct this film because in the original script, it was not African Americans. It was just it wasn't specified, but Spike Lee changed it to the five African Americans. And interesting, one thing that's very interesting is that Delroy Lindo's character, no, it's not his. Well, it's his. One of them's a Trump supporter. Was it his character? I can't
It's a
remember
Del
which
Rolando
one.
character, yeah.
Yeah. So that adds a wrinkle into it.
Yes.
But yeah,
And
it's
Jonathan
it.
Majors obviously not in the good graces these days after his convictions as he was back then. But if you separate art from artist, he does give a really excellent supporting performance in this movie as the sons of one of the lead characters. So that's that. But Jonathan, your pick from 2020, did you have as much difficulty as I did?
At first I did, but then I realized I had watched a film just a few weeks ago, and this one is drastically shorter because mine is only 10 minutes long, as opposed to one that's over 2.5 hours. I picked a film by Jonathan Glazer that was filmed early in the pandemic called Strasbourg 1518. It is a 10-minute short that was filmed in dancers' apartments doing interpretive dance. That was connected to a historical real event where there was this hysteria, this mania that took over the citizens of Strasbourg just over 500 years ago. And this short is this like interpretive dance piece where for 10 minutes you see these different dancers in their apartments. Like one of them has a bucket with water and is frantically washing her hands over and over again and flailing about, and once taking her sweater off and putting it back on and taking it off and putting it back on. It's kind of through dance depicting the ritualized hysteria of living during COVID. And it just is really incredible. I just found it really astonishing. It's one of the best things I've seen for the first time this year. But it's also, I would say, the best COVID film I've ever seen. It never directly has a reference to COVID, but it's obviously a COVID film. It has the kind of interesting historical connection that it's kind of interpretation of this hysteria that took over this city. But it's interesting too. It has one of the interesting final credits is that it lists every person involved in the film in alphabetical order by their name and then puts their credit next to it instead of going like director and then producer. You know, like they, there's even like I think DGA rules about like what order things are put in. I guess maybe because it was like this handmade short, they have just everyone list like you'll have like an actor and then a producer and then the cinematographer. You know, it's like you have the just the names in alphabetical order, but it is streaming on Canopy if anyone has that wonderful service that's available through a lot of public libraries and universities. Jonathan Glazer, you know, director of only four feature films in 24 years now, Sexy Beast, Birth, Under the Skin, and last year's Oscar-winning film, The Zone of Interest. So I highly recommend when you have 10 minutes to spare, Strasbourg 1518.
So a good 2 hours and 20 minutes shorter than my pick.
Yes.
So you can have a double feature and be over in less than 3 hours. So there
I
you
know.
go. So would you want to say something?
I was just going to say that sometimes you could watch like a really long movie. I remember this is so random. Remember, I saw this dark comedy, Moving On with Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, and it was like 80 something minutes long. And then I saw John Wick Chapter 4, which is nearly 3 hours long. But watching them as a double feature, it was like the normal length of a double feature because like one was really short and one was really long, but if you put them together, it's like averages out to like a normal length of a double feature. Yes.
So, for someone who is not the documentary person on this podcast, I'm 2 out of my 5 will be that. So, for my final pick from 2019, my movie is Diego Maradona, directed by Asif Kapadia, who had previously directed Cinna and Amy. And I'm no expert on documentaries, but is one of my favorite documentary filmmakers working today. It premiered at the 2019 Cannes Film Festival and got a release in the United States through HBO. That's how I saw it, so I did not see this in theaters. But it basically uses entirely archival footage and archival sound recordings to tell the story of Diego Maradona, one of the greatest soccer players of all time. There were
Never heard of him
particularly
until you just said his name.
well, he died a couple years ago. And up, he's up there with Pele and Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi as the sort of people that you could make an argument for as being the best player of all time. But he also had a very turbulent and controversial life off the field. So a lot of the documentary goes into that. And the sort of period that the movie covers is the time he was playing in Naples for SSC Napoli from 1984 to 1991. And during his time there, there's a lot of connections with the local organized crime that very much dominates the city, as well as some other questionable and sometimes downright despicable things that he does off the field. But because he's so good on the field, everyone looks past these flaws. And because he's kind of funny and charming, he's kind of the kind of bad guy that people allow to get away with stuff because he makes them happy in lots of other ways. But a very interesting character and someone who's so charismatic and complex and in some ways difficult to pin down that I think people who aren't even fans of sports or soccer specifically could still enjoy this documentary. I think that was very much the same with Kapadia's film from, I believe it was 2012, about Ayrton Senna, who was a F1 driver who died in a
2010.
race. 2010. Okay, so a little before I thought so. And I was not a fan of F1 or motor racing generally when I saw that, but the character was so interesting, and the manner it's presented with the archival footage is so stylistically interesting and compelling, and has a real sense of momentum as it continues on. This movie makes a great use of soundtrack. The opening shots of it are set to DeLorean Dynamite by Todd Terje, one of my favorite instrumental albums of the last 10 years. So real propulsive movie, giving a very interesting perspective on one of the, even though Jonathan hasn't heard of him, one of the most famous athletes around the world of the last 50 years or so. I'm sure if you go to most places outside of the US and mention Diego Maradona, a good percentage of people will have heard from him or about him. So one I'm sure you haven't seen, but you are familiar with Asif Kapadia's other work, I believe, right?
Amy is one of the great documentaries of the previous decade. Absolutely heartbreaking. I am not very excited about the
Back to
narrative
Black.
biopic. Yeah, just watch Amy. But yeah, I remember the British critic I really like, Mark Kermode, used Senna as like a prime example of like he had absolutely no interest in race car driving. He still has absolutely no interest whatsoever, would not be caught dead going to a race car event, but thought it was one of the best films of the year. So yeah, I mean, there's plenty of films, narrative, and documentaries where I care absolutely nothing, have virtually no or zero knowledge of the subject matter, but it's a really good film. I mean, my top example is Moneyball, where it's a movie about statistics and baseball, and I hate math and I hate sports, and it was one of my top 10 films that year.
So, I mean, this is, I think it's only available on HBO, so it's not
On
something that,
Max.
It is on Max. Yeah, they changed the name a few years
Yeah.
ago. I'm like still calling it HBO. Did you watch the Conan O'Brien Hot Ones? Did you ever watch that?
Yes.
He had a big thing going on about it. HBO sounded great. Why did they change it to Max? Like him, still adjusting to that, even though the name change happened like years ago at this point, at least a few. So Diego Maradona is my final pick, representing 2019. And I'm pretty sure I put this on my top 10 of the year in 2019, but we didn't talk about it because you had not seen it. So a little bit more of an expansion on why I like this movie so much. So your final pick, Jonathan, representing the year 2019, is.
A Todd Haynes film I picked. I think this is a very underrated movie, Dark Waters. Perhaps it is the least seen of his movies because it is not queer at all. Not that all of his films are. May December is not really directly queer, except for there's the character, there's like one character I think that is, but a lot of his, he's one of the great gay filmmakers the last 30 years, Carol, and you have the narrative film he did, the Velvet Goldmine,
Oh,
which,
yeah.
yeah, which was like very David Bowie bisexual glam rock era. But
Yes.
Dark Waters is like his Alan J. Pakula film. It's the guy who directed Klute and the Parallax View. It's just this like conspiracy theory, journalist film,
A bit
trying
like
to,
Spotlight.
yeah, also starring Mark Ruffalo. This film is just a really gripping, entertaining adult drama that they kind of don't make anymore. It came out towards the end of 2019 and like nobody saw it, nobody talked about it. It got good enough reviews.
And it was advertised pretty well. I remember seeing the preview at a lot of different movies I saw, but I never ended up seeing it.
It has Anne Hathaway playing the wife, Tim Robbins is in it, the good character actor Bill Camp, who was more recently in Drive Away Dolls and was really good in a movie Wildlife by Jake Gyllenhaal that Paul Dano directed. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies where I just feel like it's not that people don't like it, it's just no one saw it. And I thought it was a really fine movie, and I don't know why it didn't get, I mean, I'm not shocked it like didn't sweep, get a ton of Oscar
And
nominations. It's
make
maybe not,
$500 million.
I know, but it's just, I think it's the type of movie that a lot of people caught up with on streaming and on, they're like, oh, this looks good, Mark Ruffalo, and it's like got good reviews. And oh, Todd Haynes, I
Also,
think a lot of people,
deals with
Todd,
pretty
people don't even know it.
heavy subject matter, right? Like it's about like chemical dumps, right?
Right. It's also kind of similar to, if you could say like in the genre of something like Silkwood or the
The
China
Insider.
Syndrome, yeah, where it's like exposing corruption. And yeah, I just thought it was a very well done film. I highly recommend Dark Waters. Let's see if it's on Hulu. Not all of mine are, but
Mark
no.
Ruffalo, who is generally, I feel like, been doing supporting performances for the last bit of time. And definitely for the Avengers movies, he's never the star of any of those. He doesn't have any. He's like, I think, the one Marvel character, basically, who
Well,
isn't the lead in any of his movies. He's not the lead in Spotlight. He's not the lead in Poor Things.
he's been nominated 4 times for Oscars for Best Supporting Actor. He was in this mini series, I Know This Much to Be True, where he played twins. That's by the guy who did The Place Beyond the Pines, Derek.
John France, right?
Cian France, how do you
C.N.
say his name?
France, Chon
Yeah, he
Falls.
was the lead in that. Not only played he played two people in it, but yeah, he's one of the great actors you can plug in to. I mean, one sad thing is, I mean, he's done some really interesting films in the last 15 years, obviously. I think Foxcatcher, very underrated, and
But
Spotlight,
also a
that's a,
supporting performance,
yeah,
right?
but he's in all these junk of, he's in all these
Marvel
Avengers
movies.
movies. Yeah, it
But
makes
he's
me
one
sad.
of the
Like,
best parts of this, to be honest, because
I can't say.
well, yeah, you can, but I think
I
when they're the
literally have
lead,
not seen him in any, I play the Hulk ever.
you haven't seen Thor Ragnarok?
I haven't seen any MCU film with Mark Ruffalo.
You might enjoy that one particularly, but you also could be completely lost having no background information.
Yeah, that's the trouble when there's actually a good one. Supposedly, you get lost because you
You
haven't
haven't
seen
seen the
all.
previous 40? Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It's they're
But
starting to finally realize that that's not maybe the best business strategy when everyone isn't keeping up with it. It worked for a little while, but not anymore. So Dark Waters, I guess that's one I really should see. I mean, Todd Haynes, one of the great living American directors. And I mean, how is Anna Hathaway? Pretty, she plays the wife of
yeah.
Mark Ruffalo's character. She's good
Yeah.
enough.
She people forget, like, she there was this weird, I think it's like over now, but there was an era where they were like people really kind of nasty about Anne Hathaway and rolled their eyes and were like,
Yeah,
but
she
I mean
tries so
she
hard and stuff like
I know,
that.
but like Rachel getting, I mean, people who thought that never saw Rachel Getting Married. Like, she's a really good actress and she makes interesting choice. She was in a James Gray movie, Armageddon Time, 2 years ago. She was in a really, remember we went to see the movie, a really weird monster movie, Colossus, what was it
Oh
called?
yes, where she moves back to her hometown and
And she
realizes
gets
she's
drunk.
controlling a monster
Yeah.
in Korea
And
or
she's,
something.
I know. I was gonna say Dark Waters has a lot of really interesting character actors pop up. I said Bill Camp's in it, but yeah, Bill Pullman in it, Victor Garber, Mare Winningham, William Jackson Harper, it has a, and it's shot by his longtime DP, Ed Lockman, who got another Oscar nomination earlier this year for El Conde. Yeah, this was a good movie. I think that it just kind of flew under the radar. Sometimes movies, because it's the dumb award season, like they dump all these movies in the last like 6 weeks, 2 months of the year, and some really good movies just like barely get seen because they're maybe not quite, at the level of getting a bunch of nominations, and people are like, oh, I don't have time to watch that. I got to watch things that get 5+ nominations only. So Dark Waters streaming to rent on Apple TV.
Not on
No,
Hulu.
sadly. But yes, I recommend Dark Waters. And so we have two Todd Haynes films
Yeah.
that I think that, it was a weird time during movies because of the pandemic, but there were a number of, I mean, one thing about 2020, and I haven't seen, there's a lot of them I still want to watch. A lot of really good documentaries came out because I think people had like filmed stuff already and they were able to complete them at
In
home.
post, yeah.
Yeah. So there was Frederick Wiseman's 4-hour and 35-minute movie, City Hall, that Cayuda Cinema picked as his favorite film of the best film
He
that
just
year.
loves a long movie, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean, some of his early ones, like Titicoc Follies in High School, are under 90 minutes, but yeah, he's not one
He's a bit like
against doing.
Scorsese, getting a bit
I
more
know.
long-winded
But
in his later stages.
so next time, let's see, 20, let's see, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14. So 2014 to 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Yeah, we'll do 2014 to 2018.
And it'll be less difficult moving forward because we won't have already talked about them on
Yeah,
various
it'll be
episodes of
whatever
the
films we
podcast.
want. And I think
Yeah.
the idea, though, is that we're not necessarily going to pick,
What
like,
do we think the
oh,
best one is? Yeah.
like the movie that everyone saw, like kind of films that are, we want people to catch up with, they may not have seen.
Yes,
I think a
yes.
lot, I think almost all of our picks are ones that a lot of people never saw.
No, absolutely.
Yes.
Do you
Well,
want to
thanks for
recap it
listening.
or? Yeah. Favorite
No, figures
episodes?
listening.
Yeah. Anyone who's ever listened to any episode, thank you so much. 100 episodes of Movie Rats. Let's look forward to 200 down the line. Maybe that won't be 5 years from now, or maybe we'll be better and have less gaps of months and months between episodes in the near future. But yeah, thank you all for listening, and we will be back next time.